You're listening to the Empowered Caregiver Show, where we uplift caregivers through education and support while also lifting up their invaluable role in society. I'm Kristen.
And I'm Liza.
And together we are the Empowered Caregivers.
We have a great show planned for today, and I cannot wait to get started. We are going to be joined by Lynn Abate Johnson, a business consultant and global community builder in the digital marketing space, who wrote a book, Out of Love, about her caregiving experience she had with her mother and her amazing journey of working while being a caregiver. But first, we're going to speak with our state representative, Alex Jors from State Assembly District 79.
Welcome, Alex. Liza had the opportunity to meet you a few weeks ago during Disability Advocacy Day with her son, Caden. So I want to introduce myself and tell you a little bit about my story. I'm Kristen Voss, and I've been in Middleton for about 12 years now, and I'm excited that you're now representing me out in the State Assembly. I have a daughter who has gone through the Middleton school system ever since second grade, and she has epilepsy, autism, and an intellectual disability. Now that everyone knows a bit about me, how about you take a moment and introduce yourself and share a little about your political background and why you wanted to join us tonight to talk about caregiver issues.
Well, thanks, Kristen. I'm so happy to be here with you all. I think this is such an important issue, and the way you all are uplifting it is so important for our community to continue to hear about all the good work that we need to do to uplift our caregivers. So yes, I'm from Middleton. I currently represent the 79th Assembly District here at the state capitol. And I was a staff member here for a long time. And then I realized that there was a county board seat opening up in the area that I lived in. So I decided to get involved in local politics. And that's really where I got to see the ways that we can support our community. And so that's how I got started. And then I eventually saw a seat that opened up here in the 79th district, and was interested in representing my community and really uplifting our voices together about the issues that we care about. So I fortunately was successful and got to be elected by my constituents to represent the 79th.
Yes, and I'm so excited because I voted for you.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
And I know that your family has some direct experience with being a family caregiver. Your father, Bob Jors, passed due to pancreatic cancer in 2020. And I'm so sorry for your loss, Alex. And Kristen and I had the pleasure of working with your dad in the past through our role as the district family engagement liaison at the Middleton Cross Plains Area High School. And I'm just wondering if you could tell listeners about the struggle in your own family's caregiving journey, and what did it teach you about caregiving?
Well, that's a great question. And I'll just kind of start out with who my dad was for those in the community who may not know him. He was the athletic director at Middleton High School. And something that that was always important to him is investing in people and making sure that we're supporting people and supporting students. And that's something that he was very passionate about and something that he instilled in me. A lot of the reason that I ran for this office was because of the way that the community surrounded him and supported him and our family when he got his diagnosis and, went through the process of dealing with pancreatic cancer. And it really does highlight the importance of family caregivers and the work that they do, but then also that at any moment, at any time, somebody in our community can or might need to become a family caregiver. And this is something that has really shown me that we need to do so much better in our states to make sure that we're supporting families and being able to take the time off that they need or be able to be financially supported in that way if something should happen to their family members. So that's why I think it's important.
Thank you, Alex, for sharing that and telling a little bit about what your father did for the community. I apologize for keeping that out. The Juers family is a huge pillar in the Middleton community, always doing the good work and fighting the good fight for us.
Yeah, and I want to thank you for your vulnerability and sharing your caregiving story, because I do think what really resonated with me is when you said anybody can all of a sudden wake up one day and realize that they now are needing care, or mm-hmm. what we're really focusing on, having to give that care. And your family is definitely an example of that. And I know many of us sat around trying to figure out ways to support your family. And that was one of the things that resonated, is it's like, this can happen to anybody at any time. So I really appreciate you sharing that with us and letting us use that as a lesson for others to understand why this is a relevant issue, bipartisan, right? It doesn't have mm-hmm. anything to do with your political affiliation. But as we are speaking to lawmakers across the state, a recurring theme we keep hearing over and over is the power of telling your personal story. Can you tell the listeners, because we're really trying to inspire them, the importance of sharing your story and the impact it has in this legislative process, please, an advocacy process?
Well, absolutely. I think that personal stories are really what makes the difference in decision makers' minds, especially here at the Capitol and with elected officials. You know, sometimes they may not have a story, or they may not have a personal experience, whether it be with a caregiving experience or another issue. I think that when they are able to hear from constituents or people that have firsthand knowledge about, you know, what the experience is, it just makes it more real for decision makers. So I think that, you know, sometimes people, you know, have to share their story again and again and again. It can get exhausting, but it is so important. And that's why I am so thankful for those that are willing to share their stories and willing to come and advocate for their issues to the state capitol. And it's helpful for me and my colleagues to be able to be reminded of that and why these issues are so important and why we have to do our best to make the most informed and best decisions we can for the greatest number of people.
Great point. I tend to be someone who wants to focus on the practicality. So I put Hasselbein on the spot mm-hmm. and I said, do you actually read all the emails I send you? And she said, I do, Kristen. And so I'm going to put you on the spot a little bit. You can tell me if a staffer does, but I want to understand, like, is it worth it for us to keep taking from these advocacy groups the portion that they, you know, write for us and then include mm-hmm. our little story? Is it worth it to do that?
Absolutely. That's exactly what I was going to suggest. You know, we do do our due diligence to, and I especially, you know, I have a folder, so all the contacts come through me and make sure that I'm able to look at what each person is saying. But I will tell you, it makes a difference if somebody, instead of just sending a regular form email, which you should always do and make sure that folks know where you stand on issues, but if you can include that personal experience, that personal story, and why it matters to you, I think that really makes a difference in legislators' minds, because, you know, we do get a lot of contacts, but that's why we're here, to make sure we're reading and responding to them and telling folks, you know, where we stand on issues.
Well, and Kristen and I were kind of strategically. Yes.
Oh, strategic.
such a tongue twister for me. For reaching out to you. One, you're in our backyard, so we literally, like, know where to find you, right? You have no choice but to say yes. But that's not it. The reason is because you're newly elected, and I'm assuming that some of these issues, you know, have to be new to you, and you're learning about them as you go. So we reached out to all newly elected assembly people, and so we had the opportunity to tell, you know, from our perspective and give them the microphone to share their caregiving stories. And I know that there's a lot of issues that are impacting family caregivers that are in the budget. Can you tell us one that you think would make the greatest impact to support family caregivers?
You're right. There are many issues in this current budget that I think would make a lot of difference for folks that are in the caregiving space. And one that I have tried to uplift as well is establishing a paid family and medical leave program in Wisconsin, because, like we discussed before, these issues can come up sometimes out of left field. So you need to be prepared and ready to financially be there for your families in a time of need. So that's something that, you know, I have had personal experience with a child that was needing to be in the NICU for a significant amount of time when he was born. Just making sure that we're giving families the time that they need to be able to take care of loved ones. But there are so many other issues in this budget that I think will support caregivers. And I think that the thing that we need to continue to do is uplifting these messages and sharing why these policy items will be important. So everything from tax credits to paid time off to investing in our caregiver workforce and families, I think will make a difference in the end.
Can you help me? This is the one I always get stuck on, so I'm glad you chose it. I don't really understand if I was someone that wasn't a caregiver, and yes, we can keep telling them you never know when it might hit you, but how is that leave program actually going to operate?
So I think it will give employers and employees an option to be able to pay into this program that the state will jumpstart in this budget with. I think it's over $200 million to be able to pay out in the first year. So families can take that significant amount of time off if they're family member needs to undergo medical treatment, if it's a birth in the family. And I think that while it's just a piece or just a building block, I think that it's a good way to start centering our caregiver workforce and also those who are experiencing it every day, just to have that issue to support.
It is so important because you hear stories time and time again of caregivers taking their own vacation days and their own sick days off and not giving them any time to have respite or recuperate when they need it.
Right. And so it helps prevent the burnout. But that's helpful for me to understand where the government piece is going to step in. So I really appreciate you explaining that. And I've been blessed because I've been a public school teacher and our union helped provide that for us. Right. So again, not to get super political, but to recognize that having those kind of safety nets are there to help us in case we do end up in these emergency situations or to help our loved ones and our neighbors. Alex, this has been so fun. I can't wait to have you back sometime to talk about some other issues and hear how it's going after your first year. We really appreciate you taking your time. And when listeners come back, we're going to be talking about caregiving while also being employed with Lynn Abate Johnson, a national author, business consultant, and global community builder in the digital marketing space. You're listening to the Empowered Caregiver Show, where we are joined by Lynn Abate Johnson, a business consultant and global community builder in the digital marketing space. She wrote the book Out of Love about the caregiving experience she had with her mother and her amazing journey of working while also being a caregiver.
Lynn, you had recently published Out of Love, A Daughter's Journey with Her Mom to the End. Can you tell us what inspired you to write the book and what do you hope readers will take away from it? Oh, oops. I think you're still on mute, Lynn.
Yes, I was.
Happens to the best of us.
Great to hear your voice.
Hello, and thank you so much, both of you, for having me, Liza and Kristen. I really appreciate it. Really, this book had to come out of me because I have been so concerned ever since my journey of transformation through caregiving and grief. My mom was diagnosed with ovarian cancer, stage 3C ovarian cancer in 2011. She died May 1st, 2017. And I always felt, I kept a journal during that time that was an online journal to inform family and friends of exactly what was going on day by day. So in my book, that's how each chapter starts. It's with a snippet of that journal entry. And then I really thought it was important to look back on that because it's been a number of years now. And so I'm looking back on that in hindsight with a different perspective than I had when I was going through those 6+ years of being her caregiver. And I know that back then, I was not aware that there was so much support for family caregivers. And now I'm so glad that you and other other organizations and communities like yours exist. It's so important. So I wrote my story to empower and encourage other family caregivers, to let them know that you are not alone, that all of the things that you feel are normal, like things that we don't like to discuss normally, are normal.
Exactly.
And to destigmatize that.
Well, and it's wonderful that I like, so you wrote the book after the experience. When did the book then get published?
Just November of 2022.
Okay, so very recently. And so, and did you write all the way up till about beginning of 2022? So we're reading some of your blogs from back then while it was happening, and then we're reading your analysis post it.
Yes.
That's almost up to current day.
Right up through, I mean, right up through the time it practically got published, you know, because there was a lot of editing and there's a lot of storytelling. And I think that in your recent interview with the governor, and I've heard you both say, the personal stories make all the difference.
Yes,
and that's what I think we have to keep repeating, our personal stories, and drawing out the personal stories from each other. And we've got to be more connected. We've got to be in community. Otherwise, nothing will happen.
Yeah, that's a really good point. I mean, that insight, nothing's going to happen if we don't do this together.
Right. Yes. And building that sense of community. And you can do that by telling your short story, sharing your stories, and noticing the things that you have in common. I know a lot of times you feel very alone in your caregiving experience, and you know, some areas that may differ. And I'm curious, because you had said that you didn't realize the caregiver resources that were out there when you were in the thick of it. So when in your journey did you identify yourself as a family caregiver? And did you take the time out while you were caring for your mom to do research on caregiving and what that means and what that looks like?
No, I did not.
Right.
None of us
no
do. Right.
Idea.
Right.
I had no clue that caregiving was actually a word or a term or a job or a
role.
All of a sudden, whatever role. I just knew that I had to take care of my mom. Luckily, I'm the oldest of five children, so I did have some help. When my mom was feeling good, she was the boss, so she directed us. However, no, that's a short answer. And so I really didn't learn, and I'm still learning. And that's why I love that I did go through with putting the book out, because now the book has become, instead of being like, oh, well, this is my journey and, you know, you're going to be okay too. Like, I'm okay, you're going to be okay. It's more like a conversation starter now. And it's opened up so many doors for me, because frankly, I still have way more questions then I have answers.
Can you speak to that? What does that mean?
I wonder about, you know, how our culture is going to look in the years going forward. I wonder how our society is going to adapt to this new generations upon generations of all of a sudden caregivers who never asked for these roles. We certainly never had any training. We're going, as you know, the statistics say, you know, we're doing this without pay. There's no compensation for it, really. And in some instances, it really could make a difference for so many family caregivers to know that they had some financial support, some backing. And so that's why I love to see, and I'm so curious about what's going on, you know, even state to state. You know, and forget about the politics. This is a people issue.
Exactly.
This is a human being issue.
Right. Well, and what I'm curious about with you then is, it would be so easy. So I have, I did long distance caregiving for both of my parents, and they have since passed. And I, in many ways, would have walked away from all of it, except that my daughter, as many of our listeners know, was born with different disabilities. So I can't walk away from that. Right. So I'm curious about, what has made you not walk away, right? Why did you feel after she passed, after your official role as a family caregiver was over, why did you stick around?
It's just going to keep going on and on and on and on. Caregiving never stops. As long as we love people, and as long as we're even grieving, going through the grief process, there's caregiving to be done. And sometimes it's for a loved one and sometimes it's for ourselves.
Oh, good point. Excellent point. And I think what is going to be really interesting when we come back is to hear how you're accurate that it goes on and on and on. And so do all of the other demands, because you also were working full time while you were a caregiver. And I can't wait to hear more about your insight on how to balance the two things. We'll be back in just a moment.
Listening to the Empowered Caregiver Show, and we are joined with Lynn Abate Johnson, a business consultant and author of Out of Love, about the caregiving experience she had with her mother and her journey of working while being a caregiver. Approximately 75% of all caregivers under the age of 50 also work full-time. Of working family caregivers, 56% feel like their current situation is not sustainable, according to a survey taken by the Wisconsin Family and Caregiver Support Alliance.
So in this segment, Lynn, we talked last segment about how you're an author, right? And this is your first book, correct?
Yes, it is.
Right. And so we've got this first book published just very recently, but obviously you were doing something else to pay the bills, right? So can you tell us about your role as a business consultant and global community builder?
Yes. My first love, of course. I've been building community since I was a kid, looking over the counter at customers in my family's roller skating rink back in the Detroit, Michigan area.
Fun.
And that's the business that my grandfather got into when he immigrated to Detroit from Baghdad, Iraq. So, you know, the family business, right? I started at 9 years old. I was waiting on customers. I learned old-fashioned things like picking up the phone on the first ring. Don't let that phone ring. Don't let people wait to feel heard, to feel seen. And so these are things that I was so excited about when digital marketing came in, you know, and all of the social media channels. And so I thought, you know, I'm going to turn that into something that humanizes brands, humanizes businesses, because it's possible, even across through the screen and on the keyboard, it is very possible, and I've proven this over the many years that I've been a digital marketer and community builder and business consultant, to build a holistic business over time that includes basically looking at people in the eye digitally, you know, shaking hands, saying hello, how are you, building relationships over time that go right to your bottom line, because people only buy from people. They don't buy from logos. They don't buy from brands. People buy from people, and only people that they know, like, and trust, right? It's kind of an old buzzword thing, sure, you know, sure, that marketers use, know, like, and trust. But it's true. It has validity. And so that's what I've been practicing over all of the years, is taking what I knew about building community and businesses from the time I was a little girl to now doing it online as well. I think it's important, and I think it's not just important, but I think it's crucial for businesses to get really comfortable with using the tools. I always say, use the tools, don't let the tools use you.
Ooh,
and
I like
so
that.
What I mean by that is that, for example, if your business is on social media, turn off your notifications. You know, there's no reason to have an app buzzing you or beeping at you all of the time, all day long. Turn those notifications off, because you're in charge of your community building. You're in charge of how you build your business, and how I always say, manage your energy and not your time. So I've learned over all of these years, you know, working globally with, you know, all kinds of conscious brands, I've learned to manage my energy more than my time. And when I was taking care of my mom during those 6 years, I was working in Silicon Valley for a internet startup. And I learned I was working remotely. So fortunately, I didn't really reveal what I was doing at home. I didn't talk about my private life much. And while that kind of shot my nervous system, I still realized I learned my lessons from making those mistakes back then, that I really needed to start learning how to manage my energy over my time.
Okay, that's fascinating. And I think it sounds as though in your experience, you might not have already made the connections to what should employers do to make caregiver-friendly workplaces, but your lived experience can give you some insight to that. Because your lived experience of feeling the pressure to not share your caregiving stress, your lived experience of recognizing that the bottom line of every business is people, and the bottom line of being a family caregiver is being a caring person who still needs to take care of themselves. So I'm going to ask you, and this might be on the spot, but I'm going to ask you, can you connect all those dots for me? How do I tell an employer, you need to recognize that by looking at me as a family caregiver and investing in me as a family caregiver, it's helpful for all of us?
That's a really good question. And I think it's very much a hot topic for today. So I'm glad that we're talking about it, because the statistics show that business bottom lines are going to benefit from employers and teams and the people and culture business units to not only recognize, but also foster community within their communities, within their business communities. It's the only way going forward that businesses are going to be more successful and that they're going to be around for the long haul. You know, all businesses want to scale, right? The most important piece for any business to scale is relationships, and not just relationships externally with prospects and customers, but relationships internally. So if I had felt safe back in 2011, and I knew that my bosses, the founders of, there were three founders of that startup in Silicon Valley. If I had felt safe, I would have gone to them and I would have said, hey guys, this is what's going on in my personal life. And instead I, you know, bucked up and yep. showed up and performed well while I was also doing the same thing at home and being available for my mom. Little did my team at work know, my marketing team, know that I was working on my laptop in hospital waiting rooms and ICU waiting rooms and emergency departments every weekend, you know, when something went chaos. So it's really important today to also show statistics. You know, I saw this one statistic I heard, and you quoted a few at the beginning, Liza. 80% of all people who need care are being cared for by a family caregiver. And that was from your interview recently with the governor. Mm-hmm. And it's staggering. And yet, I mean, I know it's true. And I think that there's just a dearth of education. I mean, I hate to be crass about it, but
no, it's true.
A lot of times it's a matter of educating organizations and educating systems and educating the real people behind the brands. You know, if we ask, and this is why you'll see me a lot on LinkedIn talking about stuff that a lot of people will not talk about on LinkedIn because they want to maintain some an air of professionalism.
Mm-hmm.
Professionalism, yes.
Right.
And I'm ready to turn things on their heads. And because Excellent. I do social media for a living, I can do that. So a lot of times you'll see me talking about, you know, how are you really?
Nice.
Right.
Like, what's going on with you really, CEO, CTO, CFO? Who are you leaving at home, mm-hmm. or who's in your home while you're working remotely that is in need of some care? Mm-hmm. Do you have a child who has some kind of a diagnosis or has just gotten in a motorcycle accident, God forbid? So, you know, do you have a parent? Do you have a sibling? So many different scenarios that everyday people experience, and businesses are run by everyday people, period, end of story.
I'm curious, given your business background and some of the work that you do, I think it might be a great opportunity or time for caregivers in the workplace, not right now, but getting there in the sense, like you said, we're creating this next generation work culture, right? That takes in the whole person and their outside story as well. And I just see the timing of that great for caregivers. I'm curious, do you think that switch is changing because of the Gen Zers? Is it the next generation? Is it social media? I would imagine, would have an impact on this, because in the pandemic, so many people had to work remotely because they had people that they were caring for.
Exactly. So guess what? We found out what's possible, right? We found out during these last few years of the pandemic, we have been discovering new and creative ways to work at home, to work at work, and how to integrate. I love what you said about the whole person too, Liza. It's so important to address the whole person. In my own leadership journey, that's what I've been working on, to bring my whole self to work, to show up authentically and in a meaningful way.
Right. And what I'm loving about that is that then models what you want from the people that you're leading. But I'm going to push back, and I don't know you as a leader, but then how do you as the leader create the space so that the people you are in charge of, because you mentioned the CEO, the CFO, but what about the people, the mid-level people? What about the people who don't feel like they've got that opportunity to say, hey, this is what's going on at home? How do we educate you, me, Liza, excuse me, our audience? How do we educate employers to be more open to that and family caregivers who are employees to assert themselves?
Well, maybe for me, it's a little bit easier because I am outspoken and I don't shy away from hard conversations. So I think it's important to find allies at work. And I actually did. I found a couple of people at work that I said on the DL, like, keep this to yourself, but my mom's got cancer and I'm dealing with that at home. I said, but just don't say anything, because I didn't want to be judged, right, for my, performance or whatever perceived notions the bosses would have. I think to answer your question, it starts with one conversation at a time and finding those allies, and then starting with that relationship that you might have with even one coworker. It could make all the difference. And being persistent, like, continue to repeat this message of humanity, of care, of community, of bringing our whole selves to work and get together. I think little by little, we will seed what we need to harvest later. We need to start planting seeds more and more.
Yes.
That makes complete sense. I'm wondering if you had to do it all over again, when it comes to the employment piece, would you go about it the same way, or what have you learned?
Oh, I would do it so much differently. So much differently, Kristen. I wouldn't stop at just finding one or two allies. I might actually lead some kind of a caregiver revolution.
Awesome.
And I would do it gently. I would speak into the listening of my audience, right? My husband always says, Lynn, read the room, read the room.
Yep.
And so, because I'm a strong personality, doesn't mean I should like bombard people.
Right. But I think it is an important thing to still. So, what I'm working on is not bombarding, not confronting, not challenging, but inviting and addressing.
Inviting.
Right. And so I think addressing these, because it might surprise you, but I am also been labeled kind of a direct, strong personality. And that's why
you're my people.
Exactly.
My people.
Well, and then give me a microphone and it gets even dangerous, you know, more dangerous. But yeah, I think it's the wording that we use, the tone that we use, the approach, and again, that community building. Find your allies, find the people that can join you. We're going to have to go in just a moment, but before we do that, I do like to ask powerful questions, and those are ones where we push people to go inward and look at their own personal experience and values. We know authentic gratitude can be at the core of navigating through the tough times. And so I want to know, what were you grateful for during your caregiving journey? And then how about now? And you have about a minute to answer that, dear.
Okay. Easy. I was so grateful that we had the time with my mom that we did, considering her pretty severe diagnosis. So I was able to do some what they call the hospice grief counselors called anticipatory grief. And so that was a big, big gift of those years. And since then, I'm so grateful that I stuck it through and that I actually published this book. I think more than ever, these conversation starters are important for all of us, and different voices matter. So my voice is only one voice, one perspective, and they all matter.
Well, I love your voice. I love what you have to say. And I also would love it if people went out and bought your book. So before we let you go, can you let everyone know where they can learn more about you and how they can get your book?
Yes. LynnAbatejohnsonBook.com. And everything is there.
Awesome. Excellent.
Lynn. And on Amazon as well.
And it's right on Amazon.
I got to put that in there. Okay, right. Stay tuned. After this short break, we'll be listening to President Biden speak on caregiver relief coming down at the federal level. You're listening to the Empowered Caregiver Show. We were just speaking with Linda Abate-Johnson, the author of Out of Love, a book about her caregiving experience she had with her mother. You can find it on her website and on Amazon.
And it's LynnAbateJohnson.com.
Yes.
Yes. Okay. The White House issued a whole sweeping set of executive actions to support family caregivers and the paid care workforce yesterday. I was so excited when I opened up my inbox and got one or two messages, and then through the course of the day got more and more and more and like, highlight this and focus on this and wait, have you guys caught this? And so it's really exciting to see executive actions, right? Having the governor last week was a huge win for us. And then within a week, seeing our president taking executive actions. Some of these that have been outlined include new dementia care models that include support for respite care.
Yay.
And so what that means is, in taking the funding and the direction and creation of dementia care models, there's going to be built in requirements to put in respite care for their family caregivers. Another thing that these initiatives outlined was making sure that there are improvements to make it easier for family caregivers to access information if their loved one is a Medicare beneficiary. For good or for bad, Medicare drives so much of the healthcare system in this country. And so if we can get family caregivers represented in the Medicare pieces, we are winning. And then we're also going to see more support for family caregivers through the hospital discharge process. That's a near and dear project to yours and my heart because of some of the work we've been doing with Bryn Seaman. Mm-hmm. And I'm so excited to see, again, that's happening on a federal level. And then last but not least, cash. Mm-hmm. We're going to hear and see and feel that there's going to be an increase of funding through the American Recovery Plan to provide $145 million for Congress that they've explicitly recognized the important role that family caregivers occupy in our nation's long-term services and support systems. So they're putting up the bucks.
Yes. And that $145 million will actually go to the National Family Caregiver Support Program. And this was established in 2000 when Congress explicitly recognized the important role of family caregivers in the nation's long-term service and support system. So the National Family Caregiver Support System provides grants to states and territories to fund a range of supports that assist family and informal caregivers to care for their loved ones at their home as long as possible. So let's go ahead and listen to a few clips of Biden's speech on supporting family caregivers.
so much about. Who needs the most help? Our children, the people we love, people with disabilities, including veterans. And how do we value those caring for them? Child care workers, nurses, home care workers, family caregivers. The executive order I'm about to sign is the most comprehensive set of actions any administration has taken to date to increase access to high-quality child care and long-term care and support for the caregivers.
Wow. What a cool... I've got chills.
Yeah.
What a cool feeling. I hadn't heard it yet. I got to be honest and transparent with everybody because I hadn't gotten to work here earlier and gotten connected with you. I didn't know that we were going to be playing that. And so I hadn't heard it myself. And I have chills.
Woohoo. Evan, was there more to it or did you play it all?
There are four clips.
Okay. Why don't we go ahead and play? There's four different clips of his speech. I think we have enough time.
No, we're fine. Yeah.
Okay.
So here we go.
Okay, great. Then play a little bit more. I misunderstood.
Like I call for in my State of the Union address, we're going to improve long-term care by strengthening staffing standards at nursing homes. And I also instructed the Department of Health and Human Services to figure out how home care workers can get the pay they deserve with the money already allocated. I'm directing the VA, the Veterans Administration, to cut red tape and give veterans who need assistance at home more flexibility to pick their own caregivers. We've heard directly from the veterans that this is one of the top priorities for them, one of their top priorities. To ensure we have enough care workers, we're expanding partnerships with community colleges, registered apprenticeship programs, and the AmeriCorps. You know, more than one in every five adults is a family caregiver. This order recognizes the labor of love and makes sure family caregivers are involved and informed when a hospital discharges the one they love, that the caregivers know about the Medicare benefits their loved one qualifies for, that caregivers of veterans have access to mental health support. Folks, there's a lot we can do.
Wow.
Mom and Dad. The United States of America, we should have no one. No one should have to choose between caring for the parents who raise them, the children who depend on them, for the paycheck they rely on to take care of both. That's what today's all about. Let me conclude with this. The actions we're taking today are about dignity, security, and peace of mind for working families and caregivers all across the country. And they're good for the economy as well.
What I'm loving about all of this, Liza, is that we're hearing all of the things that relate to our tagline. Educate. Mm-hmm. He wants to educate caregivers, veterans, people about Medicare, about what a family caregiver is going through, what people are entitled to. He's advocating. He's supporting. And he's celebrating. And he's doing it in a way that is so systematically approach with such a systematic approach, because he's taking on the paid caregiver workforce and he's taking problems, and he's also taking on the problems with the family caregiver. Wow, this is just such exciting news.
I agree. I'm glad I was able to track that little snippet down. And I also want to let listeners to know to join us next week, because we're going to pick up this conversation. We're having Angela from the Call for Culture. Call for Culture is an organization that is data-driven, that has an approach to, their mission is to create human-centric workplaces, better leaders, and thriving communities.
Right. It's going to be excellent. We'll keep talking about the things that are coming down from a legislative level and these conversations about work. Remember to keep listening to us. Come back next week. And ladies and gentlemen, if you're a family caregiver, you got this.